Welcome to the Fallout Lorecast, the podcast that explores the boundaries of our knowledge about the world of Fallout. Wastelanders and Vault Dwellers, welcome back to the Fallout Lorecast. We are taking a look at our next group of different pre-war businesses, and some of them, of course, survive the end of the world better than others do. Some of them, we only have little details. This week, we are covering locations or types of locations that I don't think we've covered before. Have we talked about a grocery store or an ice cream shop? I don't believe so. So we'll be covering those and some others, but first we have to start with a bank, Concord Saving and Loan. This is one of those unmarked and inaccessible locations, and this one exists in Fallout 4, of course, in the Commonwealth, and inside the town of Concord. Now, there's only one location for Concord Saving and Loan, and it makes sense because there's just Concord. But in the real world, sometimes you have banks that are named after real locations that end up expanding out beyond those locations, but not in this case. This building is located in, of course, Concord, across the street from Wright's Inn and Walden Drugs, if you know the location in the game. But there's more here that I find interesting. First, on the building itself is the remnants of a banner, and the banner is labeled CSL at the top, of course, for Concord Saving and Loan. But if you look closely at it, there is a faded and torn picture of a man, a very cartoonish looking man with money bags and money, throwing cash over his head. He's wearing a black hat and a black suit and a black tie. And at the bottom, there are some other words that have been, well, lost to time. They've been cut through the shreds of what's left of the bottom of this gigantic thing. It's draped in the front of the bank. And maybe this was part of some sort of marketing thing they were doing at the time or some sort of promotion at the bank. But it doesn't all remain there. Some of it is missing. But directly next to that banner on the same exact building is a very large structure labeled Municipal Plutonium Well. There's actually a few of these. I believe there's three of them, all located in Concord, and these are very large structures. They run the entire height of the building, which is multiple stories. So, and on different buildings, they feature slightly differently, but in this specific building, it's three stories tall, and it appears that there is a tube that comes down to the ground level, and there's some sort of location at the bottom where you would put things to acquire power or plutonium supplies. And we know that fusion power and that sort of thing was popular during the pre-war time. So maybe this was something that distributed plutonium for your devices or something like that, but it's fairly large in size. It's not designed in a way that, say, a car or a truck could run up underneath it, so it doesn't seem to work in that kind of fashion, but it does seem to have a big tube that would deposit something into a receptacle or maybe something that goes on the receptacle to then cart away the plutonium that it provides. And these seemingly attach to other structures, some of them running under the ground, and these tubes actually go other places as well. But what I'm curious about here isn't necessarily the fact that this structure exists, it's how it would function and what it actually provides to the public. And I can't seem to find any actual evidence about that other than what is labeled on it and the shape and design of the structure. And this is just tangentially related to the actual business here, Concord Saving and Loan, because it's on the same building, but I don't believe it was a part of the bank. This seems and is labeled municipal, like an actual government structure that was designed here for public use. So the bank itself, you can't go inside, it's all boarded up, and there's really not a whole lot of other information about it, but this structure, this municipal plutonium well, is odd, right? It's a little bit weird. All right, let's move on to the next one.
Your gaze upon one of America's greatest minds, preserved through the miracles of science.
Here's another smaller entry. The company is called Cordex, or at least it seems to be. This is a military brand of plastic explosives that you can only find mentioned in Fallout and Fallout 2, the first two in the series. So this company didn't get picked up by Bethesda. We haven't seen it in any of their games, but that doesn't mean that it won't in the future. But what's interesting is that it only shows up in the one in-game description of the plastic explosives that are mentioned in both of those games. The file is labeled proitem.msg, and it lists a bunch of different items. So, for example, the rocket launcher. It's labeled as 1300. Each item is given a number. This is clearly for use in the game to have a list of all the different items and keep them separated with some descriptions. And then there's the description of it, 1301, a Rockwell Big Bazooka rocket launcher with a deluxe 3-pound trigger, fires AP or explosive rockets, minimum ST for strength, 6. So some basic stats, some basic information. So in the case of the Cordex plastic explosives, that is 8500. So 8500 plastic explosives, 8501, a chunk of Cordex, a military brand of plastic explosives, highly stable, very destructive, includes a timer. And that's it. And there's another file for Fallout 2, which is basically the same name with the same designation, the same number. So most of these items, when they started working on the second game in the series, had similar descriptions or the same exact descriptions in this case. And I'm sure they added some things to this file as the game kind of built out a little bit bigger than the first one, but it was in the same engine, so they didn't need to make very many changes, and you don't really come across a Cordex building or anything like that in Fallout 1 or Fallout 2. So we don't know if they were associated with some other military or other explosives or weapons organization or group, if they have some sort of connection with a Robco or somebody else. We don't really know. They just show up in this one place with this one mention in the files, which is pretty cool. So I mentioned we'd be getting a grocery store, and we do. This one is called Cornucopia Fresh Groceries. Now, we've all probably seen a cornucopia, the horn of plenty, the 3,000-year-old symbol of abundance and nourishment stemming from Greek mythology that you still see all over the place. In fact, this is one of those things that is associated with, say, the fall harvest and all the different fruits or vegetables coming out of this horn-shaped basket kind of thing. In fact, cornucopia shows up in the whole debate about the Mandela effect, this idea that we remember things differently in the past than what they actually seem like. And one of the debates is about the underwear company Fruit of the Loom and if there was a cornucopia in their actual brand logo or not. And a lot of people seem to remember that there is, but there seems to be a strong lack of evidence that there ever was a cornucopia. But in this case, there absolutely is a cornucopia here because that's the name of the business. Now, this chain was operated in Washington, D.C., so you can, of course, come across a location in Fallout 3. But there's also a location that is mentioned to exist somewhere in the American Southwest, so we can assume that this was a fairly large chain of stores that spanned a lot of distance, going from Washington, D.C. all the way to the American Southwest. Now, from a meta perspective, some locations only show up one place in a map somewhere, like when we were talking about Concord Saving and Loan. But for this supermarket chain, there are a number of locations that you can actually see in Fallout 3, and this chain is mentioned in Fallout New Vegas, although we don't actually get to see a location. So that's part of the whole expanse of it spanning most of the country. But here, these are the different locations. Georgetown West, Southwest Seneca Station, Tacoma Park, and Seaward Square Southeast. So as you're traveling across the Fallout 3 map, if you go back and play, or who knows, maybe if they decide to do a remaster or if have already been working on it and we get a shadow drop one of these days, then this is one of those locations you can kind of look for. And you'll know it by the big blue and yellow sign. In fact, the colors feel a lot like Vault-Tec. And I don't see any evidence that Vault-Tec was associated with this grocery store chain, but the colors seem to be that similar kind of medium blue and goldish yellow. And on the sign is a big yellow triangle. It's got that kind of Art Deco-y elongated shapes kind of thing going for it. And you can see at the top of the triangle, a blue section that kind of juts out from it that says Cornucopia Fresh. And then at the bottom, groceries. And the signs on these buildings are fairly large. They stick out. They're very noticeable. In fact, they're the size vertically of an entire floor of the building. And many of the buildings that these signs are on that were actually the shops are fairly large too. 2 stories, 3 stories in one case. And yet the signs are gigantic. The buildings are mostly dilapidated, but the signs still survived somehow. They must have been made of something more secure and stronger than the actual buildings themselves. The first 2 locations I mentioned, Georgetown West and Northwest Seneca Station, can be entered, and you can find some supplies and items that you can pick up in both of them, but the second one is filled with rad roaches, so, well, I guess rad roaches aren't that dangerous, unless you are the Vault 31 crew from the TV show. But yeah, there you go. So go poke around to see what it looks like to be in an old grocery store that also has a gigantic sign that doesn't fall over for some reason. Next up, we have a business that sells ice cream. And I don't know if the ice cream they sell shows up in grocery stores like the one we just talked about, or like a Super Duper Mart or something like that, but they do have a location in Fallout 76. This ice cream store is called the Cow Spots Creamery. This is in the forest region of Appalachia, which, if you haven't played Fallout 76, is kind of the first zone that you're in. It's the one that looks the least ruined or altered or strange. Lots of still green trees and that sort of thing. And this is one of those classic looking old buildings from Appalachia. It's like three stories plus an attic. Yellow paint used to cover most of it. It's now kind of faded. And you can see on the outside the Cow Spots Creamery sign featuring a very derpy looking cow face. In red text, you see Cow Spots, and underneath it, there's a little banner that says Creamery. And there's an even bigger version of it up on the corner of the building with 3 gigantic ice cream cones. All 3 of them are white, as if they are serving vanilla. Now, this isn't just a retail location where you can go buy the ice cream. The factory is right next to it, where they would have produced the ice cream, which makes me wonder if they had a larger amount of these going out to local grocery stores or something like that. Now, with the events of Fallout 76 happening only 2.5 decades after the bombs dropped, there are a lot of remnants of little bits of story that we get from the people who lived here after that happened and the events that led to the world that we leave the vault and come and find. And if you haven't caught up on all of that, go back and listen to my episodes about that. But basically, there were conflicts going on in Appalachia and different groups that were vying for control and different amounts of power over different things. And there were people in the community working with or for the responders in order to try to help. And this is one of the locations where we find some remnants for that kind of stuff. There's a note called Amy's Note that says, "Jeff, the password for my environmental monitoring program terminal at Tygart Water Treatment is all caps Babylon. Share my research with the responders, but make sure those Brotherhood bastards don't get their hands on it. Amy." Now, this is part of a side quest in the game that plays into those same events that were happening at the time. I won't go into more detail on that. There's also, though, a holotape. And here's what it says when you play it.
"I talked to Sheila yesterday about finding some food. She said she'd give me the info about a place if I grabbed some food for both of us. I agreed, and she pointed me to an old building nearby filled with machines that could make something she called it cream. I never heard of it, but she promised that it tasted good and it would keep us both from starving. According to her instructions, all I had to do was push a button and the machines would start cranking out bottles. What she forgot to tell me was that it would be loud as hell and attract every creature in earshot. It took everything I had to fight the things that swarmed the building. I barely made it out of there alive."
This holotape ends with him saying, "If anyone finds this, tell Sheila that I'm keeping all of the damn bottles of cream. Next time she can get her own." And what we're seeing here is somebody later on who doesn't know what this is, rediscovering a creamery for the ice cream shop and having grown up now, decades later, not aware of what this even is. But I guess it confirms that, at least at that point, it was still functional. The machines would run, and they drew lots of course, terrible things, and this guy, Samuel, barely made it out alive. Now, as for Samuel and Sheila, do they show up anywhere else? Well, we don't have any other mention of them specifically, no other holotapes that were left by either of them, and don't really understand if they had any other connection to any other things going on in the world. But this other note by Amy is Amy Carey, and is directly connected to the Daily Quest Ecological Balance, and she was monitoring what was going on with the environmental changes, with the scorched and all of that. And as I said before, we're not going to get into all the details, but the one thing that you can take from this is that as you're running around in Appalachia, you'll come across these air sensors, these little machines that are located in different locations, and that's all tied to this and this person, Amy. Now, Amy, we do know some things about. She was a Vault Tech student. She and this guy, Jeff, who she left the note for, went on a date to this creamery before the bombs fell. But unfortunately, things didn't work out great for her. We do know that she did not survive, because if you make your way into the employees-only area, you can find her corpse. She seems to be dressed up in kind of a punk rock, kind of grunge sort of fashion kind of way. She's wearing the equivalent of like Converse shoes with socks over top of what might be blue tights or jeans, and a pink floral skirt over top of that, with a studded belt that you would see, like, I don't know, somebody dressing up in punk rock kind of attire would wear. And what appears to be a leather vest with then another shirt underneath that, and what appears to be the remnants of striped socks, both on her feet, but also on her arms, as kind of makeshift gloves, but with a hole at the bottom, so they're not completely covering the hands. It's quite the ensemble. So there you go. There's a whole lot going on at this little ice creamery location.
Oh, I don't know anything, mister. I just think it. And then I don't.
So before you get ice cream, you might want to get some dinner. And what sounds more delicious when you're up in the Boston area than crab at the Crab Shack? Now, I don't have to Google search this to know that there are probably a dozen different businesses across the U.S. that are called Crab Shack that serve crab. It seems like a obvious name, right? The alliteration and crab and a shack, and there you go. What else do you need to know about that? Well, there was also a seafood chain of restaurants in Fallout 4 and 76 called Crab Shack. Locations include the Forest Grove March, which is a flooded location. You can't get into it. Many of the buildings in this area are like that. And then there's also the toxic dried lake bed just north of Clarksburg. Again, inaccessible, but you can at least get on the roof on this one. And at this location, you can find messages written in the remnants of some of the people who seem to live here, or at least dwelled here long enough to leave some chalk writing and some other changes to some signs and things. You find some corpses and some supplies laid out, like you do in so many other locations across the Fallout games. In this location, though, one of the Crab Shack signs has been adjusted a little bit. It originally said all you can eat crab, and then had one of those neon open signs on it, up on top of the roof where people could see it from a distance. But in the years that have passed, the B in crab fell off, and somebody took the chalk that they were using to draw tic-tac-toe boards and things like that on the ground and other places, like on the walls, and they replaced the B with a P. So now it says all you can eat crab. I'm sure that brings lots of customers. So outside of some environmental storytelling, there's really not a whole lot else going on here that we can discover. So let's move on to the next one. So we've finally finished the C's and we're on to the D's with D. Miller and Sons. This was a jewelry repair and seems to be a making place somewhere. Making place, like that's an official term. Somewhere where they manufactured, I guess, jewelry. Maybe that's the best way to say it. This shows up in Fallout 4, and we only know it from one mention in the Treasures inventory. This is a holotape that can be found at the Treasures exhibit. This is the Treasures of Jamaica Plain. I believe this has come up in one of these previous episodes, but they are listed as donating some jewelry to this exhibit, and otherwise, there isn't anything else mentioned about this at all. We don't know where the location was. It seems that it must have been a family-operated establishment, D. Miller and Sons. It's in the name, but that's about all we can tell. Who is this Miller? What does D stand for? Who were his sons and what happened to them? Well, we might not ever find out. So on to the next one. It's time for that spring reset. I'm taking a look at everything in my closet and figuring out that, oh no, this absolutely needs to go. And it's about time I replace things so that my clothes aren't older than my 15-year-old. Now you might think that they lasted that long because they were well made, but no, they're in terrible condition. Unlike the new jeans I just got from Quince. Jeans have always been my personal go-to because you can kind of wear them for lots of different things, but maybe they're not your thing. Maybe you're looking for, I don't know, 100% European linen with insanely soft flow knit active wear fabric. It's definitely getting warmer, and their flow knit active wear is moisture wicking, anti-odor, and soft enough that you'll actually want to wear it every day. So pick out what you want. You can't go wrong because they have prices 50 to 60% less than similar brands. And like I said before, they are high quality. I continue to wear their clothes all the time, and I know that these new jeans are going to last me a lot better than the other things in my wardrobe. And on top of it, they look great. They're so comfortable. And I spent just as much on the jeans that I am now cleaning out of my wardrobe. So if you're looking for something better, just all around better, go check out Quince. So go do it right now. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Go to quince.com/falloutlore for free shipping and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. Go to quince.com/falloutlore for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/falloutlore. Surprise, we have two ice cream brands, or like, I guess these are brands. Dairy Fresh is the next one on our list. This one doesn't show up in the games. It only shows up in the Fallout TV show. In fact, remember the scene in season one where Lucy gets sold by the ghoul and there's the Mr. Handy? He goes past and he's dragging her on like this wheeled chair kind of device where she's kind of laying back, and he passes by the remnants of a big display for Dairy Fresh ice cream. And on the display is another cow, kind of similar in the face to the one that I talked about before, and two children and a big container of vanilla Dairy Fresh ice cream. The art style has that kind of cartoony 1950s storybook kind of thing going on with the different characters with their, I don't know. If you saw it, you would know what I'm talking about. This looks like something out of one of those old-timey books. And the colors are bright and vibrant, and it still holds together pretty well. Now, it's in an indoor location, so that makes sense. And in fact, because this location has power, the sign is still powered as well. And there's some neon that goes around the Dairy Fresh ice cream logo and also around the container of ice cream and what appears to be little drops of milk that are flying from the udder of the cow into the top of the ice cream container. Now, this scene happens pretty quick in the show, and I have a feeling you're paying more attention to what's happening in the foreground than the background, but that's why you've got me, so you can zoom in on stuff like this, which is actually kind of hilarious, and somebody took some time to put together, with even including the drops of milk flying into the container. So you're very welcome for that. But outside of this one image, we don't really know anything else about this company, where it comes from, why the display was in this location in such a large fashion. Did there used to be, I don't know, some big promotion at what, it seems like this used to be like a grocery store, but maybe there was a big promotion in this one part of the store. But in the real world, and I worked in packaging, typically you would have some sort of fold-up display. I mean, think about going to the grocery store and you come across, I don't know, a big display for the Super Bowl or something like that, right? Typically it's corrugated materials that are kind of stacked up and printed and folded in a way that creates this fancy sign with the products in front of it. This is on another level. This isn't some corrugated thing that fell over during the years because of changes in humidity. This is a large, actual built sign with working electronics in it. So maybe this was a big push by that, I don't know, that brand to get into grocery stores. And below it, you can see what seemed to be the remnants of some coolers that probably had the ice cream in it at some point. So there you go. You didn't expect it. Two brands of ice cream in the same episode. So far on this episode, we've covered a lot of more obscure names of businesses and products and things that only show up in very specific locations that aren't super common. But what if I bring up, and we're in the D's, what if I bring up Dandy Boy? You immediately will think Dandy Boy apples, right? The Dandy Boy apples show up in Fallout 3 and all the games after that. New Vegas, 4, 76. So most of you will recognize Dandy Boy apples when you see them. You can still find the boxes places. They're these red boxes with yellow text that says Dandy Boy apples, produce of USA. And then there's the red apples on the boxes, right? Everybody knows what these look like. Now, the question that I have is, did Dandy Boy make anything other than apples? I'm not really sure. It seems like the apples were their major product. And we know that this was inspired by real world other products. So if you look at the fruit crates in American apple and fruit manufacturers from the early to mid 20th century, especially ones from the Washington area like Orchard Boy, Jolly Boy, Danny Boy, they all seem to have boy for some reason. Well, clearly Orchard, Jolly, or Danny Boy inspires Dandy Boy apples in the Fallout universe. Now, the word dandy also is not a word that you really hear very much anymore, but it reminds me of Yankee Doodle Dandy, like in the song. And that makes sense because a Yankee Doodle Dandy associated with a game that they were designing based in Washington, D.C., having to do with American history and that sort of thing. You can see the inspiration. It just kind of flows from that. And the word dandy is interesting, right? Eventually, it came to mean somebody who focused too much on their physical appearance and like a man who was a little bit obsessed with the way they came across in a way that in modern society, and I'm talking 20th century, as this word doesn't really come up anymore, was considered kind of a pejorative. But originally, back in the, I don't know, the late 18th century, 1700s, a good 100, 200 years before this, it was considered somebody who was refined, somebody who was well put together, somebody who had a taste for things that are of quality and that sort of thing. But it didn't stay that way. But when looking back on things, you can see why you would call something a dandy apple, because it would associate it originally with being very good, of high quality, and that sort of thing. Now, Dandy Boy apples don't only show up in the video games, the mainline video games. They also show up in Fallout Shelter, which is the mobile game, but even the role-playing game, Fallout the role-playing game, it shows up in the rule book. This is an item that you can find across the board, and it didn't start with Fallout 1 and Fallout 2, but since Fallout 3, this has become a staple product of the Fallout universe. So there you go.
If you have any questions about Nuka World, I'd be delighted to answer them.
So from the Commonwealth Savings and Loan to the Dandy Boy apples, that's going to do it for our pre-war businesses this week. Thank you for tuning in, and thank you for your continued support. Big shout-outs to our patrons, patreon.com/falloutlorecast, where you can sign up and join us and get all sorts of fun things, t-shirts and stickers, join us for patron chats, ad-free episodes, and welcome to our newest patrons, Cole S., Patrick O., and Isa Does Things. Wonderful name. Thank you for joining and signing up. Also, I have to shout out all of our Sentry bots, Germinator, The Main Monkey, and Iramudi. Thank you for your continued support as well. And to all 111 of our current paying patrons, you guys are amazing. Thank you so much. And there's even more free ones. You can join us for free and make sure that if something changes or I'm doing like a giveaway or something, you can be in the know. So join us, patreon.com/falloutlorecast. Also, if you want to help out in other ways, leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Comment, leave something positive in the comments on Spotify, and any of that stuff is extremely helpful. But if you leave a 5-star review, I will read it out on a future episode. So it's another way for you to get your words on the show. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week. And until next time, stay safe out there. And I guess try out the ice cream as long as it doesn't turn on a bunch of machines that bring a bunch of monsters and kill you. So good luck with that. All right. See you next time. To plug into everything else we're doing, check out robotsradio.net. Reach out to me on Twitter at robots_radio. Check out the Robots Radio Rocket Club, where you can join me and a bunch of our other creators creating your podcast, starting a new podcast, or helping your current podcast grow. There's more information about that on robotsradio.net as well. And you can always talk with us and the entire community, over 2,000 people, on the Robots Radio Discord. Come join us. We'd love to chat with you. See you guys next time. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.